Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Dive, Season 2, Episode 11. It's the end of the spring split regular season. We're going to touch back on our preseason power rankings and see who had the best predictions. We're going to talk about the patch, and then we're going to preview the playoffs. How are you guys feeling today?
Great. It's a little chilly out, though.
That's why you got your scarf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're already prepared. I was thinking ahead.
I brought it in. Might as well wear it on the dive.
Yeah. I was sneezing a lot this morning. I think it's because of spring.
He's the only one who hasn't gotten sick, so. Yeah,
I haven't gotten sick yet.
It's coming.
Yeah. All year, I've been completely healthy.
We'll see, but.
Good luck with that.
I'm feeling pretty good. So I think we should just hit up maybe we got some really good responses last week. We talked about some of the named plays that we had. You know, we were talking about all kinds of different ones, you know, like Mad Life and Insect and these sorts of things. And you actually got sent like a really good list. And we got a ton of tweets throughout the week from a lot of different people about some of the ones that we missed and maybe some ones to consider.
Yeah, essentially it's what plays are named after players. I think the Mad Life hook was pretty early on when Thresh first came out, and even when he was the one person playing Blitzcrank. There was the Reggie Blue Card from when he played Twisted Fate, and what I was.
You said there were positive ones.
Some of them are positive.
What's with your list? No, I mean
the Scar Award.
We missed. Some of the positive ones. We missed Captain Jack. That was a really good one.
So yeah, I actually
Peke backdoor.
Yeah, I actually 3, sent out
Shockwave
a tweet asking for them. So I feel like Soaz teleporting away, you know, from an impossible situation is also
is the
one.
Soaz.
Even though that's not like quite as associated with a specific play. Mm-hmm. There's also one of my favorites is the team-wide ones, the M5 Empire. Nunu from a bush. That one, when that one first happened, like that that was one of the first big
the Fanatic brush, I guess, or is that the same thing? I mean, Empire is kind of
Empire is a specific play. Okay. So for me, that one was
because I don't know if we actually talked about the Fanatic brush last week either, but everyone calls it the Fanatic brush, at least in EU. Anytime I'm watching EU LCS, if someone's in a brush, it's the Fanatic brush.
That one has different variations too, because it started with the special bush that they used multiple times.
Exactly.
But then it turned into anybody hiding in any bush.
Fanatic bush specifically is supposed to be in either the top or the bottom lane next to the second tier turret, that one random brush that's on the side. Fanatic would just be there with five people frequently and surprise people.
Yeah.
I was waiting in that bush way before Fanatic was, but it's not called the Jap bush.
The hipster bush.
It's true. Go ask old Dignitas.
Go ask
Jap. We would use that in scrims all the time. Pre-ending Fanatic. But yeah, just thanks for all the engagement on that. Like, most of them still are negative, but they're pretty funny.
I asked for positive ones only. I got like two more positive responses.
We also got some really good videos sent in. Cody was requesting the Febman video with explosions. Some of them were pretty damn good. There was one that actually had editing in clips of the dive with these clips in the background and all these things. Like, there was people put in some work. I was impressed.
Did you retweet that or tweet it out?
We responded to them. I think at least I retweeted
one. I retweeted one.
All right. Yeah.
Go check Kobe's Twitter to watch the Forbidden video. Anyway, thank you for the player names. We're going to talk about our preseason power rankings because there was a Reddit user who did a squared error analysis?
Yeah, mean squared error.
Okay, mean squared error analysis to see whose preseason split predictions were correct. What were the results, Kobe? And what is that? How does that analysis work?
I didn't actually even read the Reddit thread yet, but you told me that I won, so I'm all aboard.
So he thinks that this is the most accurate way to judge if the predictions were in fact correct.
Yeah, this one's really accurate. Well, Freak responded. He said it was accurate. Also, then he put in his list and was like, I was the best.
Yeah.
It's his mean squared
his
error.
His list that has no verification that he did it before.
Yeah, I need to see it with a newspaper.
When I was looking at them, I was just thinking, oh, we just judge based off of like how many total ranks were you off essentially, right? Like it's like, oh, I put TSM first, they got third, so I was two off. And I kind of went through it like that. And with that, I was 20 positions off overall. You were 20 positions off overall, and Kobe was 18. So Kobe wins either way.
Whatever way you want to judge it, Zale.
But it was... You know, it's kind of funny because we actually were all very, very similar. And the kind of make or break here was that Kobe got 8th, 9th, 10th in exact order, even though we all had the exact teams in 8th, 9th.
I also have 100 Thieves, one higher than you.
Yeah.
So that's one closer. And then Jet screwed everything up with the CLG.
Yeah.
I mean, the 100 Thieves thing, but I had like C9, Raiden 5th, you had them 4th. So there was some small differences, but it came down to a lot. It was interesting because we all had the same three teams in the bottom. And those were the three teams in the bottom. So that was like, okay, that was the thing that everyone kind of have got,
right?
Which, you know, maybe speaks to really the strength of the rosters that they had coming in.
Yeah, we all had COGTS MTL as our top three.
Mm-hmm.
That clearly was not right, as 100 Thieves was first place and Echo Fox was second place. That's where most of the error came in. Let's just kind of retro a little bit what happened at the end of the regular season, because that was what these were trying to predict, were the end of regular season standings. And I think it's also a little bit funny because all of us put Cloud9 at fourth or fifth. They ended fifth, but they spent the entire split in first or second. And it is a little funny because first to sixth is one game different in the regular season. So there was so much variance throughout the regular season where there were some teams that were performing well at the start, like Echo Fox and Cloud9, and then there were the teams that surged at the end, like 100 Thieves and TSM, who are now the first and the third seed in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, a really interesting one to talk about a little bit is Echo Fox, simply because of how far we were all kind of off. Kobe and I had them both at seventh. You had them at sixth, so you're the one who had them actually highest.
Yeah.
And that's because we had a lot of questions about the variance that this team was going to bring out. We knew that there was going to be very high highs for it, potentially, but also potentially very low lows. And it is kind of interesting because you talk about the difference of one game between first and sixth, essentially, now. And they're certainly, like, you know, with the C9 went from first slash second for nine straight weeks coming into the last week, and then they end fifth. It feels like Echo Fox was heavily trending down at the end with the subs coming in and everything.
Yep.
And maybe the implosion that everyone was expecting at the start of the year actually happened, but there just wasn't enough games left for to really affect the standings. It sounds funny to
we'll
say,
see
but
in playoffs.
Exactly. That's what's really going to be interesting.
And for this one, the prediction for me a lot also wasn't necessarily like, I think they are going to be middle of the pack. It's, ooh, they're either going to be extremely good with all these players because they don't have, you know, the internal issues, or they don't have the arguments, or they don't have you know, all these things that people are expecting from the clash of personalities, or they do, and they're going to be very low. So I feel like a lot of people kind of average those or whatever. They're like, I'm not comfortable putting them way up there.
I'm going to hedge my bets.
And that's not actually, you know, predicting where they're actually going to be. It's kind of hedging your bets.
Yeah, and then the team that we're actually the furthest off on, me especially, is CLG, because you guys both had them third, I had them first. And when I did that, I was specifically thinking, Rainover is going to be really good again, like he was in 2016. He was not.
Also, weren't you talking to Tony a lot? He's filling your head with
Tony
all
was like,
positive.
We got a shot calling system. And I'm like, you got a shot calling system. I believe you, man. It turns out it's like, hoo-hee, shot call. That's the system. And then it didn't work out very well. And towards the end, their shot calling system
with Biofrost.
Biofrost was actually pretty good until they kind of deflated in the end of the season. But that's one that I think is going to be interesting coming into next split. I also just kind of have a random aside. Like, I know we're not going to go in depth on MVP voting because that is going to be, at least all team is going to be announced next, either Saturday or Sunday, and the ballot's actually locked tonight. But like, looking at these preseason power rankings, and when I think about Aphromoo, it's like COG is a perennial playoff team with Aphromoo. They lose him. They start the season 3-9. They try and make a surge and don't make playoffs. And the team Aphromoo goes to finishes first.
Mm-hmm.
That's such a strong case for me. And when I think of the way they vote for MVP in other sports, like this team without this player versus this team with this player, it makes his value so, so high for me when I just think about how 100 Thieves ended that split.
Yeah, it really is impressive, especially when you consider none of us really saw 100 Thieves being at the top. That was another one. That was kind of the big three that we were the most off on was Echo Fox, CLG, and 100 Thieves. We had them at, you know, 100 Thieves at fourth, fifth, sixth. They ended at first. It was very impressive. And it's not like they got some random scrub to replace Aphromoo on CLG, right? Biofrost had only ever won in the NALCS.
Yeah.
He had been in here for 3 years, or three splits, I guess, and had won every split. So, you know, it's definitely kind of crazy to see.
Check the tapes. Last week, I was saying Aphromoo MVP candidate before they made this run to number one spot.
The tapes have been checked. Great job, Kobe. Yeah, you did it. That's an interesting thing as we kind of move into playoffs. Anything else you want to say on these rankings before we move on to the patch?
I'll win next time.
Oh, right. We're going to talk about that because we need to have some type of bet attached to preseason power rankings.
Okay.
And I think once we figure out how it works, we will use squared error analysis to decide who is the best and the worst, because apparently
it doesn't
accurate.
Really matter what system we use to decide as long as we all agree.
Yeah, I agree on squared error
and analysis. I was right in all systems anyway, so what's my reward, Jet?
Yeah, nothing, because we
nothing,
didn't bet on it.
You didn't make a bet at the start.
But when we do it in Summer Split, we should tie first place to a reward and last place to a punishment of some kind.
And the guy in the middle just gets kind of just hanging.
Yeah, the guy in the middle is just like, well, I'm going to watch these two buffoons. Like, Kobe can wear a crown. Azale
should
can
we,
wear not
should
a crown.
Should we change it up from just, like, wearing stuff?
We'll figure it out. We'll update you guys on a later episode. We don't need to hash it out all right now.
I would love to have some ideas from social media.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
some on-air truth or dare.
Something that will... no. something that will not get us fired. Something that can be on camera for the dive.
Yeah.
Those are probably the two biggest requirements for me.
I mean, would we ever do something like Hotshot dyeing his hair or something, or is that just too much?
Sure,
that
problem.
Might be too much.
It sounds like a great bet. I'm in there. All right, you guys.
Yeah, like pink hair before Worlds. Like, what are you doing? That would be so bad.
As I said, can't get us fired.
That was in there.
Yeah, just my hair, not my head.
Yeah, would love to hear some ideas on that. But Kobe won. Azale and me either tied for last or had Azale in last.
Take a bow, Kobe. Take a bow.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, Kobe.
Okay.
Patch 8.6.
Yep. Patch 8.6.
I think this is interesting because patch 8.5 will be the playoff patch. Patch 8.6 is mainly going to be a solo queue update for you guys and what we think is going to be good, as well as the LCK and LPL, since they go into playoffs later than the NA and EU LCS, will be doing their playoffs on patch 8.6. So it will still have some competitive use cases, just not in NA. What do you guys think about this patch so far?
The big thing that stood out to me is actually some of the new runes and the Ignite change. That's the most exciting thing for me. So Ignite getting buffed, Heal getting nerfed. The whole idea is, you know, there should be more of a window of opportunity to punish people who are taking the defensive summoners. You shouldn't just be able to trade Heal for Ignite every time. They talked about the fact that mid laners were just taking Heal and TP instead of Ignite anymore. Mm-hmm. They're trying to change that up. And they actually changed Ignite's damage from 70 to 410 from 1 to 18. And it's going to 80 to 505. So pretty significant, I think.
That's a lot of damage.
Plus Heal is actually a 30-second longer cooldown.
Mm-hmm. So Ignite's a lower cooldown than Heal now.
Yeah. Well, it already was, I believe, but just not by as big of a margin. Mm-hmm. So now it's a much bigger window to, you would all in with the Ignite, they use their Heal, and you have a much bigger window to find that all in again before their Heal comes back up after your Ignite does. And that, in combination with Conqueror, that was the big one that really stood out to me, is the new Precision Keystone. And this is essentially the answer to everyone who is saying there's no Bruiser Keystone, there's something that we have. So after 4 seconds in combat, your first attack against the enemy champion gives you 10 to 35 attack damage based on level for 3 seconds and converts 20% of your damage to champions to true damage. Every time you, a melee champion only, every time you damage a champion, it refreshes the buff. So you could theoretically keep this up essentially permanently if it's a never-ending fight, right?
Yeah.
So this seems very, very strong. And those two things were the biggest to me. So I immediately started thinking, okay, well, who can use these the best? Things like Tryndamere really became like a big standout to me. I'm thinking Tryndamere with an Ignite plus Conqueror seems pretty terrifying. I know a lot of people have been talking even about Darius, who's been kind of gaining a lot of strength. Like people who are extreme lane bullies, you know, with Ignite and things like that. So that, I think, is pretty interesting and maybe could shake up some things.
Yeah, I would see Conqueror as a keystone more for the Darius or the tanky Jax. Or Tryndamere if he's playing against an Ornn or something. Because when I think about Tryndamere's play pattern, he's like three-shotting squishies, so you'll never actually have time for your Conqueror to proc when you're in your strongest case. But
when you think of tank meta and top lane, when people talk about that, right? If you are playing into tanks, it's a good way to
punch. Then you bring it as a squishy into tanks. That could potentially work really well.
It's pretty interesting. Jax is another one that really got pointed out. And people were talking about, hey, like, would this bring back the full-on DPS split push, like, style suicide Jax, right? Like, is that enough? Because there was also changes with Rageblade that people were thinking could be pretty interesting. And, you know, there was a lot of talk about, oh, well, could you bring back the Rage Blade, Blade of the Rune King, Spliff Bush style Jax? If you have this and you're doing all this true damage into a tank can't necessarily just sit there and neutralize you at a turret. Maybe you can actually just punch through and deal enough damage with the 20% additional true damage that you can just slay that guy.
Yeah. I actually didn't see this as being very complicated. I was like, oh, this is the rune for all the people that hated tanks and were complaining about tanks. This is like the tank killing rune. If you see that it is going to be one of your matchups,
like,
this is the perfect rune for you, right? True. You're going to be in combat for a while anyways because it's a tank. It's not going to do that much damage to you, and then you get to convert a lot to true damage. So, you know, take that one if you have been complaining about playing Maokais and stuff.
Yeah, there's Duskblade nerfs in this patch as well. Yep. Duskblade got hit really hard.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on all these jungler changes, actually.
Well, it's because I think some of these changes actually help junglers with Duskblade being nerfed. Sorry. Duskblade loses 120 damage at max rank. And also,
for melee,
the blackout thing is buffed. But for me, if I'm playing one of these 80 junglers, I'm actually just not going to take Duskblade anymore. I don't care that the vision thing is a little bit better. But I will play Graves again with his attack damage buff. And I will play Wukong again in the jungle with his like pretty good buffs to his attack damage growth and his crushing blow AD ratio. Warrior, Black Cleaver, Wukong, or Warrior, Black Cleaver, Graves were already competitive with the Duskblade strength. So now you just do Cleaver and you take these buffs and you go start smashing people again. I actually think both those champs are pretty good now.
I definitely agree. I was thinking a similar thing because a lot of these champions, like, you don't have to build Duskblade. And solo queue is super popular, right?
It's like a snowball item, though. It's not your reliable item that you can build every game.
I mean, it was an extremely, extremely good item. Mm-hmm. Huge burst damage. The ward clearing is actually
control is insane.
Very, very powerful as well. But Graves specifically to me, I feel like Graves is poised to just make a huge run back into the meta. Mm-hmm. Like, these are very good Graves buffs. He does not need to build Black Duskblade. He has plenty of other good options
and
for builds.
Other buffs not that long ago because he had been struggling. So he was already kind of on the cusp, I started feeling like.
Also, I think, you know, he can play the Dark Harvest style very, very well because he farms like a madman.
Yep.
And ranged champions can use Dark Harvest very, very well later game in teamfights.
Yep.
You can pick up the souls from your teammates as well if you didn't know. And then just shoot that off, go pick up another one. And it just adds even more burst damage to his kit. But the mega change of them all, Kai'Sa, I've been playing that jungle since day number one, and she is going to be so good with these changes. I actually think that they might...
She got overbuffed.
They might have to follow this up with some nerfs
or
some hotfixes or something. I started out rushing flat attack damage for Q upgrades. I really did like the Rageblade ones, but I pretty much only did those with normal games with my teammates. Okay. It's still definitely in the open for me, but now I'm more on the side of rushing the attack speed one.
Right. Blood Razor.
But yeah, it definitely depends on the team comp, and that's another thing I like with this champion. You can be very adaptive. The one thing I haven't done is I've never done the AP builds, even though it looks cool, and I've had them on my team that like just one-shot people, and the enemy team is always complaining. Like, I've had ones really pop off, like actually two-shotting people.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, so I know it's insanely bad one rate, and like I've played a number of games with it.
AP build or just Kai'Sa?
AP Kai'Sas.
Yeah.
And they have like 8 kills and stuff, and they're like, wow, they're dominating. Then you look, and they like, didn't even do more damage than a lot of other people, and it's their only ability. And it was like, so this is trying to, I think, giving it some more legitimacy, right? Because there's more AP scaling of the Q, and you're going to be able to get some more things. But
I wouldn't advise it.
Yeah, I still don't think it's probably the best, but it is interesting. Lee Sin getting some buffs to kind of make up for things. It's interesting because we actually saw Lee Sin in competitive play come in the week after the trackers removal. So like this could really push him back in. He's getting, you know, alt damage buff later in the game, especially. It's 150 higher. He's getting more energy return. The range on the resonating strike is also longer.
That's not the Sonic Wave. It's a detonation. Yeah.
But those were kind of interesting to me. And then the other one, I don't know if you guys had thought about much at all, but static shiv change seemed kind of interesting as far as like they removed the bonus damage on static shiv to minions. So as a wave clear mechanic, it seems like they are thinking more about, hey, making wave clear more difficult, or at least not making this the everyman choice. Like Hurricane probably should be the wave clear Zeal item, right? Like that kind of makes sense. But Static Shiv was just trumping it in that regard. And the only reason people really took Hurricane was A, if you're like Twitch or have some insane synergy with it, or B, there was three melee kind of on the other team. So it feels like...
I actually feel like Static Shiv should be the wave clear item.
Really?
And and Hurricane is more for on-hit champions that are looking to like get multiple of those procs for team fights and stuff. Even though they, you know, with this nerf, they did nerf the wave clearing of Static Shiv, the burst damage of it, actually, I just think like Rapid Fire Cannon, if you're looking for it to use it for burst damage on someone, Rapid Fire Cannon is just all around the better now, you know, because they made the damages closer, if not
it's
even
the
making
the
them the exact same now. Yep. Yeah. So it's the exact same, plus you get the added range. So I think the only reason you would take it is for the wave clear. And I think they were also posting, you know, some of the notes or whatever, the thinking of the designers for some additional changes for PB and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're focusing very heavily on wave clear and how they yeah. want wave clear to be a part of the strategy of the game.
Yeah.
But I think they are going to make wave clear more difficult in like multiple aspects, mm-hmm. which will be interesting to see how that actually changes the game overall, because that might be a mid-season thing where you know, we see teams having to devote more of their brain power and more strategy to wave preparation and that type of stuff.
It's definitely a big change. And even if this was supposed to be like the wave clear Zeal, it does feel like maybe Hurricane will get pushed more into that role. Because like, you know, especially for champions that ADCs that had very poor wave clear, like I always think of Vayne. Like Vayne to me, it's like when I have my IE and I have my Static Shiv, you could like one shot a wave with a tumble crit type thing. And that sort of stuff is completely gone. You know, Caitlyn even and champions like this that really depended upon that for their wave clear get weaker. To me, it inherently makes things like Tristana, who can wave clear without it, a lot stronger, because yes, maybe you have to use your E now to actually like throw that explosive charge on the mini wave to actually get the same sort of effect, but there's a very clear kind of like way to fill that gap. So that could really maybe change things up as far as like what AD carries do work, or maybe it'll be one of these things where I'm overthinking it and it doesn't actually matter, but it seemed pretty interesting, pretty impactful change to me.
Yeah. And I think the larger wave clear changes, they considered putting them in this patch, but I think because they're either not cart ready or also because they're very disruptive and LCK and LPL will be doing their playoffs on them, they're going to push them, but that's definitely something they're looking at.
Yeah, I would think that would be part of a very big mid-season thing.
And I think it's so tricky. Like, I still haven't decided where I fall on this wave clear debate, because if we say wave clear is too strong and then you make wave clear harder, does that just make the champions who can wave clear even more powerful again?
I think so.
Well, then, is the fix, what is the fix to it? Is it just changing the abilities to make the difference in lots of wave clear versus not a lot of wave clear larger? And where is the line? Because I do think at a certain point, if one Morgana W doesn't clear the back wave and you make it a little bit harder for her to clear, that doesn't make her better because she has better wave clear than someone else. Like, I think it is heavily about the breakpoints.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for me also, I would like them to change it to be more interesting to do wave clear rather than just either making it strictly harder or easier. Because if I'm just thinking about the game and the parts of the game that I enjoy, it's not interacting with minions.
Really?
It's killing champions, right? I would say that most people like to go for killing champions, right? And using wave clear or something to set up a strategy in which you get to go for a siege, or you force champions under a turret or something like this, then that can be more interesting. And the game definitely is a team game about destroying a base. It's not actually about, oh, I'm going to, you know, 1v1 this guy five times or whatever. But those are kind of the highlight parts of the game for me, you know, team fighting or split pushing duels, you know, those types of things. So I'm very curious to see what type of creative ways they can actually affect that strategy.
I do think that the Static Shift change, things like that, where you're adjusting the levers as far as not how much damage a spell does, but how much it deals to minions and monsters and these sorts of things. Like, I think those are pretty good levers if you're trying to affect it. Because as you said, Jed, it's not necessarily about like, is your wave clear slightly better than Zed's? It's like, how much better is it? Yeah. If you can just one shot the whole wave, then that's the really the big difference.
But if it takes
right?
12 seconds, then suddenly Zed has threat.
Then Zed exactly yeah. can stick around and maybe get something done. But there's it's such a complex problem, in my opinion, because mm-hmm. it affects so many things. You know, when you talk about wave clear, you know, if you're talking about the Anivia or whatever, it's not just about how the Anivia stalls a siege. It's about how that enables you to then split push and how that enables mm-hmm. you to then mm-hmm. do these different strategies. And I think it is good to have shakeups like that in the game, but it takes a long time, I think, to test it and really gain confidence in a change like that, because it's not just like, oh, how did it feel to clear the waves, Jat? It's like, well, can you actually play Fiora with this anymore? Or do you need to bring like a wave clear support? Maybe that's the new meta. Maybe you have to bring Zyra every game and they sit there with the mid laner and help do that extra damage that makes the Morgana W one shot or whatever. You know what I mean? But I'm glad that it's pushed.
Yeah. It's like, do we end up in a world where Singed is the best champion because
proxying everything?
He's proxying all three things, or is he useless now because he can't even kill off the mid? It takes him like 10 minutes there. He's like feeding poison to these minions, like trying to get it in there, and they're just like, okay.
We'll have to find out. But
anything else you guys want to touch on in the patch? I see there's a big Rageblade change, but I haven't personally done the math on it. I think that potentially heavily impacts Varus and Kog'Maw as AD carry choices, especially in tandem with some of the static Shiv stuff, could actually shake up the AD carry meta a fair bit. But there's a lot of things that were changed about Rageblade. It's 600 gold cheaper.
It total attacks
now doesn't build out of a blasting wand. It only builds out of an amp tome. It has less attack damage. It has less ability power. It has less magic damage on hit. But yeah, instead of giving bonus attack speed, it gives total attack speed.
And the melee one is percent of really bonus big damage. For me, because for Jax and stuff, so it's a half stacks. The melee champion's next basic attack fully stacks Rageblade, right? So this is something where champions with auto attack resets, such as Jax, can actually stack that massively faster.
And it's meant as a later item. Yeah. It's not meant as a rush item, because it's giving you total attack speed and bonus attack damage, which is multiplying your other stats rather than just giving you a bunch of stats up front.
And I think
but they made it so much cheaper.
But they made it cheaper.
They did make it a lot cheaper. But it is, I think, trying to really just combat, like, a lot of pretty carries I've talked about have kind of mentioned slash, you know, had concerns about the fact that no one could match these Rageblade champions on one item, right? It's just like, all right, Varus has Rageblade, can't do anything, right? Just like wait till later. And it just became way too powerful on these champions that had good synergy with it. So it's not to say that I think those champions are now just gone, because I think Varus could still just, you could do like a Blade of the Rune King first. You can do these other sorts of builds. Like you can do Bork Hurricane into a Rageblade maybe or something like that. Like just rearrange the order of your build and probably still be pretty effective. But it definitely is going to affect the one item power spike. And I'm interested to see if there are any melee champions that can really make use of this now with faster stacking, because especially for team fighting, it becomes more reasonable to actually ever get it stacked, where it's so hard to normally do that as a melee champion.
And I like that with these changes, it all kind of makes it more about the passive, the unique stacking thing, right? So you're thinking much more about the on-hit effects that you're getting value out of it, because it's both cheaper, but it's also, you know, the other buffs are less powerful.
It is playoff time in the North American LCS. And personally, I'm pretty excited for these playoffs.
Dude, I am hyped after last weekend. The 10-game day got me really ready for playoffs.
That was actually so much fun.
Yeah, I actually loved it.
Every team ended within one game of each other in the regular season. So 100 Thieves and Echo Fox get the bye. 100 Thieves went technically 9-1 in the second half, if you count their tiebreaker game, to squeeze out that first seed. Like, huge congratulations to them. Echo Fox went from 9-1 to 11-8. That's a lot of losses and not that many wins on the next half of the season. I think we'll touch more on 100 Thieves and Echo Fox next week when they play their semifinals, because there was a four-way tiebreaker for the seeds of what we're going to see this weekend. And the funniest thing about this is, even though the tiebreaker was seeded differently, the first round of those best of one bracket is the same as the first round of the quarterfinals. So Cloud9 plays TL and TSM plays Clutch, even though TSM is now the third seed and Clutch is actually the sixth seed after spending most of the second half of the split in third.
And I think that it's incredibly close when you look at the end of the season standings. And then it becomes so important to me to really look at second half strength, how these teams ended. You know, you mm-hmm. talked about 100 Thieves, you talked about Echo Fox, but you know, even comparing TSM, when you count in the tiebreaker games, I believe they were 9-2 in the second half. When you're looking at a team like Cloud9, they were like 4-8, 4-9, something like that, with the win/losses in the tiebreaker games. Mm. So these are teams on very different trajectories.
Yep.
And that is what I think made that tiebreaker bracket so exciting, because it felt very, very impactful. It didn't feel like it didn't actually matter who you got. It yep. did feel like there were very different strengths and weaknesses on the teams based on how they were performing on the end of the season.
Let's start with TL versus C9 then, because let's start with C9. What happened to C9 to make them go from tied for first, basically, to then in a four-way tie for third into finally finishing fifth? And do you think they can correct that? Because in my eyes, Licorice was amazing in the first half of the split. Mm-hmm. They played around him well, and they snowballed the leads extremely well, and he had zero tank picks. They started experimenting. They put him on tanks, and I thought his tank laning was really good. I thought his Maokai and his Cho'Gath were really good at dodging ganks. His farm was always high and he'd get pressure. But I thought the way that C9 then played around tanks in team fights was really poor. And then in the last week, it felt like they couldn't quite decide if they wanted to keep polishing the tank strategy or go back to the now less strong carry strategy. And they were nerfed on both fronts and could never really put it together. Kobe, what are your thoughts?
It's interesting because it's always a two-part thing for me. Because before, they did have tanks from Svenskeren in the jungle. Trackers was removed. Mm-hmm. You know, there have been some small hits at tanks. I think we'll still, you know, see tanks from the jungle.
Yep.
But I definitely agree that they look more comfortable when they had Licorice on some sort of DPS top, mm-hmm. And Svenskeren and Smoothie
on tanks
were kind of the frontline initiators. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they do that as a team, because you can't just like switch one part without changing the other part. What about you, Azael?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a lot on the same page. It's interesting because I do agree that a lot of his tank play wasn't super impressive, but I think there are other issues too. I mean, his Maokai game I think was pretty rough just as far as how it actually went, but also in his play, you know, he didn't seem like, so a lot of people like to meme how easy it is to play tanks and Maokai mechanics all this sort of thing, but playing tanks, I actually think, is super complicated at a pro level, and to play them really well in team fights, I think people super underestimate how much. It's not necessarily about the mechanical skill; it's about the understanding of the champion, the understanding of the limits, and like, you know, how to move in and out of a fight, how to know when you can frontline versus frontline versus when you have to dive backline versus, you know, all these different things. And that is what I felt he was missing the most. And mm-hmm. when you talk about his strong laning phase, it makes sense because he's a great mechanical player. He's a really strong laner. Like, he can do all those things in lane, but when you come to the 5v5, it doesn't feel like that guy that fully understands the limits of the champion and knows mm-hmm. where he can be, when he can be. Like in the Maokai game in particular, he ends 1-5-4. And I remember a number of instances against CLG where he kind of was standing in the front feeling like he could zone and then just instantly dies. Right. And that to me spoke more of a misunderstanding of like where you are and the power level of the game. But I would also say one of the things was like when I think a lot about their earlier success, it was also like how unlocked Smoothie felt like on some of these roaming picks and how successful he was able to be. And I think teams started to play more heavily around that and try to match that even in a lot more of their games, you know, expecting how Smoothie was going to play and these sorts of things, which really had a pretty big outcome too. But I mean, even when you're looking at like all the kind of best games for Licorice, all his best stats come from carries. All his best games come from carries. You know, his best KDAs, his best DPMs, his best CS differences, mm-hmm. everything comes from the carry games.
I really like that you bring up the Smoothie point, because this guy is an MVP candidate, mm-hmm. And he's still a very good player, yep. but definitely those last couple of weeks, you know, he lost a bit of ground in the standings. You know, Olay was performing very well against him. Afrimu was performing mm-hmm. very well against him. Mm-hmm. And we saw some uncharacteristic mistakes from Smoothie. But the thing is, you're talking about looking towards them and predicting their playoffs game.
Whether or not they can get back to that point.
You still have, yeah, you still have the, like, you know that these are good players, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we've seen the peaks and we've seen the level that they can play at. So then it becomes that balancing act of, like, weighing in the recency. The playoffs are like, are they going to be able to prep to get back to that point?
Right.
How much is the practice going to do?
And here's the recency for you. They played Team Liquid twice on patch 8.5. Mm-hmm. They lost both games. Top lane matchup in the first one was Gnar versus Ornn. And in the second one, it was Shen versus Cho'Gath. Mm-hmm. Like, those are not your Vladimir versus GP or your Camille versus Gnar type matchups that they'd be comfortable in. So they were kind of playing Impact's game. And in a larger extent, that is advantage Team Liquid. Like now, I think the meta is pretty heavily in Team Liquid's favor, especially to me when I saw the tiebreaker game they played where Team Liquid just grabbed the Ryze, grabbed the Jhin, and 1-3-1 the whole game. Like, they had such better team play in those instances. Even though Liquid was on Shen, he was constantly ulting defensively. They completely lost tempo in that game. And if they're not going to get Liquid in a matchup where he can actually get ahead of Impact in the top lane, which I don't think they necessarily can with the tank matchup, I kind of think Team Liquid's favored in this one.
Yeah.
Even though for most of the regular season, Team Liquid was looking pretty shaky.
Yeah. The other game that gives me some pause, and we're kind of bouncing around all the Cloud9 players here to put the magnifying glass on them.
Yeah.
Svenskeren in a lot of these games, especially the one with the Olaf game for me, because I was like, oh my God, this game is over. Olaf invaded. You know, they got red buff. They got Raptor Camp. They got four kills on him. This is a very snowbally champion, right? Super high power early game. You can just bully people, and you do have to be careful. People talk about like syndromes with different champions, right? Where you get like too hyped up, or you know, the power goes to your head.
Syndrome.
A lot of the plays, I'm also not sure if this is him making the calls. Oh, you know, I'm so strong, I'm going to go in for this, or he's just too far ahead of everyone else. He's blowing his ult and his ghost and stuff, and the team is a little bit too far. They can't add damage or something, and then it ends up getting turned around. And I believe that was also against Team Liquid. That was Pobelter roaming a lot on Ryze. So again, this is another conferable use case here where there are also some question marks there because people immediately, like everyone was so hyped up, like, oh yeah, Sven on C9, so much better. I'm so glad he found his home or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as this started to happen, you see the memes coming out again. Everyone's like, oh, TSM Sven again. He's getting caught out, blah, blah, blah.
But the start of that game was insane. I mean, Svenskeren started 4-0-0, he had stolen, not only did he get the red buff off level 1 evade, he also took his Raptors.
Then he
stole the next one or two extra red
buff. He left one baby Raptor so that whoever,
And Smithy starts like 0-2-0. He was down almost three levels at one point. Smithy ended that game up in levels 4-2-10, while Svenskeren went from 4-0 to one, like to 5-4, right? So it was one of those games where he really was not able to snowball it. But at the same time, it didn't feel like the lanes were doing very well either, and partially because it was these overchases and the turnarounds and things. I like the point that you're bringing up, Jad, about like comparing what these games looked like, you know, as far as tank versus tank matchups and these sorts of things. Because when I think about their earlier match in the season, it was Vladimir versus GP, and it was Smoothie at level 3 on Alistar, roam top, and actually ganked him.
And Licorice hard carried.
And Licorice hard carried the game, right? And it was off of this kind of bot lane mistake that they didn't call missing. They didn't actually let them know that the Alistar was going to be going top, and that snowballed the game and all these things. And it looks very, very different now. Like, I think Cloud9 does have the ability to win this series. I think that they have to change the way that they're playing and kind of a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. Because to me, when I look at the most recent weeks, I think that mid lane can dominate and mid lane can be that kind of like absolutely crushing role again. Mm-hmm. Like when you look at Bjergsen's recent performances, and we know Jensen can have like really incredible performances as well. Like maybe it's more than about enabling Jensen and right. really focusing on putting him ahead and putting him in this position to succeed, because he certainly can have those kind of incredible games and be the carry. And that's been how Cloud9 had played
yeah.
for a really long time, was always through Jensen. So I think it's just, can you make that shift and can you find a way to really play to your strengths on the patch?
I think that's a good point. I think even though patch 8.5, we've talked a lot about top laners and we've talked a lot about the difference between, there's actually a stat, breaking top lane turret as your first turret of the game in NALCS this split is a 58% win rate.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking bot turret as your first turret of the game is a 70% win rate.
Yeah.
So breaking bot turret is better. But then also, very few people have even tried to play through mid this split. And I think, to your point, TSM playing through Bjergsen is proven to be good.
Mm-hmm.
So if C9 can get back to that in their week of practice, I think that gives them a fighting chance.
But tight turnaround.
But also, like, it's not like Team Liquid's been all reliable this split. Like, they've had the weeks where we're like, man, Team Liquid's really good. Every lane won. They won in 30 minutes. And then they fall behind in every other game except for that C9 game, and they look awful. So I think it is a bit of a toss-up, but just the fact that they played two games on 8.5, where Team Liquid was blue side, Team Liquid now has the higher seed, so they can get blue side 3 out of 5 games. It gives them priority on Ryze or a pick man advantage in those scenarios. I think it is advantage Team Liquid, but not by much.
Yeah, I think this Cloud9 can easily win this series. This
easily.
Is a very,
but
I, very close
But do you
one.
Think they're? Do you think you would favor them?
It's. I would not, because of what we just saw, right? And because that is the most recent stuff to go off of. It's very hard to make your argument for them, right?
Right.
But the possibilities, because we know that they have the time, and these are not huge issues that are going to take months to fix with this team. Mm-hmm. The things that we're pointing to could very easily be prepped and be fixed in a week of practice, because they're only focusing on Team Liquid.
Mm-hmm.
It is just this playoff match that they're studying for, basically. So
do you want to do series predictions with series score?
I'm down, but I'm kind of curious on your guys' opinion first on how you think of Pobeltor as a player in the second half, because I remember early in the split we had that lounge stream where I was with Febben and PoE, and they're like, they put him as the best in the league in mid lane, and there was a lot of talk about that, and it feels like that talk has just quietly died off, and I haven't seen a lot of criticism levied towards Pobeltor, but I also have definitely not seen that same level of praise. And while he did have, I think, a great game against Cloud9, when I looked at their final tiebreaker against TSM, there was a lot of moments where I was like, what are you doing? Like, nonstop getting caught out in the side lane. The one fight mid lane where it felt like they could perhaps turn around the game and get all these kills in inhibitor. He Ryze ults like 1 centimeter forward, and with all these people on TSM at 10% HP.
He clicked the mini map, he said.
Yeah.
Later,
and those mistakes happen, right? Yeah. But it's a big mistake. And then from there, he goes to the side lane and by himself gets just kind of blindly pushing waves and gets caught twice in a row, and they lose the game. And they were obviously behind already, but that was a very concerning game for me. And it just kind of made me take a step back and try to reevaluate where I saw him as a player. So I was just kind of curious, what are you guys' thoughts on Pobeltor's second half?
I think the game against TSM was bad, but I also think it was not how he played normally in the second half. I think most of Team Liquid's struggles have actually been around stabilizing top lane so that bottom lane could carry. And Pobeltor's been, I think, very consistent at being there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he doesn't necessarily lose lanes. He roams quite well. He's got like a pretty strong laning phase. So I actually just, as usual, kind of put him
in the middle,
average in the middle of those mid laners. And I don't expect the game where he gets caught in the sidelines by Tom Kench constantly is like the norm.
This is funny because you have him below the line for the TSM game for sure. Jat has him in the middle.
Yeah.
And for me, the one against Cloud9 where he
that
saved
was an incredible game.
He saved this 4-0 Olaf game. Like his roams on Ryze. The reason why I'm like, oh, Sven was over chasing there, he was ghosting and ulting on Olaf and lost half his health chasing, is only because Pobeltor got the
Impact
roam
had
off
incredible
on
TPs
Ryze
as well, though.
Yeah. Impact as well. But I just thought that game was very much above the line as far as positive for Pobeltor. So it's hard to judge, right? Because he has had those ones that are below, but he's also had the exceptional performances.
And that's how I kind of ended up. I feel like, well, maybe he's somewhere in the middle, right? Like, and it's funny because it's just like that is a big shift though from the opinions in the earlier half of the split, right? Where people were talking him consistently as one of the very best, and I don't see him like that, and that's my point, is just kind of getting towards again the Jensen case for Jensen being able to carry, as far as like, hey, this is a very legitimate strategy. Both their losses against TSM, Bjergsen very heavily outperformed him. You know, we know that Jensen can be that carry player. We know that C9 can look to play through them. So to me, that really is like the biggest avenue for attack, and that should be the strategy when top lane is not seeming like they're able to enable that as much as they used to.
Bjergsen's also just playing insanely well the last couple of weeks.
Bjergsen's last like 6 or 7 games are maybe some of the best 6 or 7 games he's ever played in the NALCS. Mm-hmm. Like, I was looking up his season-wide numbers, even though for the first probably 10 or 12 games of the season, he was like average or below average in stats. And just based off the last half of the season, he's like almost number one in every category now, just because of how ridiculous he was in the second half. But yeah, I say, based on all this, Team Liquid has side selection 3-2.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I'm feeling. I feel like they're favored, but slightly. It is tough because it's more about can Cloud9 change how they have been playing rather than the strength of the team. Because I actually still feel like Cloud9 can beat them as far as the series goes.
I don't know if
they can make that big of a shift. And I do think that experience matters a lot in the top lane. And if it is tank versus tank, Impact should have the advantage, and that's probably enough to sway it for me. So I'm in the same boat. TL 3-2.
Ooh, Kobe.
It's hard, right?
Like, so
both these guys meme a lot on Twitter, depending on which team you predict.
Yeah. So the added factor here for me is I think that Reaper is a better coach, and Coaching Nine's staff overall come up with a lot of strategies that especially. Using different champions that have been successful. Whereas a lot of times you're like, oh, they pulled out the random Nocturne, or they pulled out the, you know, some quirky strategy to try and cheese people. I think that Reaper has actually done a good job over the years of using stuff like that at the right times.
Yeah.
So I'd say
like
that
Singed at Worlds last year, for instance, was super good.
A lot of different examples, even when he was a player. But that's going super far back. I don't know. I feel like something is, they're going to have some extra prep during this week or something. There's going to be some extra strategy. You know, they have
that prep to get the buy though, licorice. Right?
You don't need to buy, man. You just need to make it to the playoffs.
I mean, it's been a while since they struggled. It's not just the last day.
I know. Right? They've been slumping. So we did a lot of the split first half and split second half the split. I guess that's
too many. They were 3-6 in the last 9 games. Yeah. And then they went 1-2 if you add in the tiebreaker game. So it was 4-8 if you want to say their last 12.
Very bad second, you know,
Golden
half
Guardians
of
was 3-6 in the second half as well.
Yeah. Yeah. They were also tied with FlyQuest for second half record.
So you're definitely right. You know, it hasn't just been.
But I hear
tiebreaker.
You. I hear you. Are you going C9? I'm like, going C9, Kobe?
But Reaper, though.
Also, because both of you guys, I'm aware of this bias that happens when both of you guys predict the one team. And I realize when it's like pushing me over the edge to go for the other side, but because it is so close, then I would go Cloud9 3-2, but then I have to put the 3-2 score just because again
it's close.
These teams have been battling so closely.
Yep, this is the perfect setup for a 3-0 smashing one side or the other.
Yeah, next. Yeah, we're like, oh, it's gonna be so close.
Next one, TSM versus Clutch.
And speaking of close, I don't think this will be that.
I mean, that's what the last week told us, right? Yeah. Where
that's what the last half told us.
Yeah, Clutch beat Echo Fox in week 8 when everyone's like, yeah, quality win. They did it. Then they turned around and lost to TL. They lost to someone else. Forget who it was. Then they beat Golden Guardians. Then they lost both of their tiebreaker matches, first to TSM and second to Cloud9.
Yeah.
So that does not instill confidence in me. And then also, we have been talking about it all year, and we've been talking to all the players all year, and they're like, TSM, they're going to be good. Mm-hmm. Just wait until the end of the year. They're going to put it together.
Here it is.
The fans of every other team just hate to hear this so
much. I hate it, too.
Like, it's like this unstoppable train that's just moving towards.
Yeah. It's like, why do you always got to say TSM is going to turn it around? Like,
they made 10 finals in a row.
God damn it, because they always do.
Yeah.
It's annoying. And it's weird, too, because this is a different way of turning it around than previously. Like, previously when they would struggle, like Reggie would step in and he would, you know, coach him up. But this year, Reggie's stayed out of it the whole time. It's been Song and Mithy and Bjergsen and Mike and all those guys actually turning it around from the looks of it. And
which is probably even better for the team, to be honest.
They've had some really quality looking wins where Bjergsen and Mike have established a huge amount of mid lane control. Like, especially when they have Bjergsen on a pick like Syndra, the level 2 invade to push Lyra off of his red buff in the first tiebreaker game gave Mike that huge lead, never really gave up much mid lane pressure. And that was against Febiven, who's been, like, the best mid laner all split, in my opinion, kind of up until that game. So TSM is looking mighty good.
Right? Yeah. Another reason why I have a lot of confidence in the recent results from TSM are because the improvements are coming in the areas that we were looking for them and some of the areas that we were actually expecting improvements to come in. So you have this feeling of like, oh, here it comes. Bjergsen is starting to pop off again. Mike Young is actually, you know, improving a lot in the team play and in his individual play. And you're like, oh, God. You know, it's happening already. The, oh, we need time to gel and our communication system and blah, blah, blah. All this needs to, you know, come together. You're like, oh, it's happening.
Yeah. I mean, Mithy and Sven, too. Like, you say what you want about, like, oh, their laning phase was good all throughout the year or whatever, but it feels like they're working with the team a lot better. It feels like they're actually able to convert on advantages. I mean, one of the most impressive Tahm Kench games I'd probably ever seen was actually played by Mithy this past weekend. Like, they're just nonstop catching people out in side lanes, nonstop moving around the map, answering roams. It felt like he was everywhere, and that was really, really, like, promising for TSM to see. Not only are they able to, like, individually work together as this two-man squad, you knew they could always do that as they've played together forever, but, like, you add in the tremendous amount of experience all these guys have, you know, barring Mike Young. And then the fact that they are now working together, and it feels like they've had some of the adversity and kind of struggled through that and have come out on top now. And it's really hard to bet against this team very much. But at the same time, Clutch still did have the 2-0 in the regular season.
Yep.
I do have a little cautionary maybe side tale here, because I was looking on Reddit yesterday and there was an interview, Mike Young with Travis, where Mike was talking about how much stress he has been under. And he actually said that he thought it was a good thing to, like, stress himself out and get like all of this out of the way, or like it would help him improve. But then he was also saying things like, yeah, you know, I was having trouble, like, looking at the screen during scrims, and I was getting headaches, and you know, all of these physical manifestations
of
stress and of pressure. And so that would be my cautionary tale, because TSM has always been the organization that's like, we are actually just going to have an insane work ethic and we're going to have, you know, everybody just grinding away. And we heard about their triple blocks before everyone or something like that. Like,
and it's an extremely critical culture, right? Like, you get to set your team culture however you want. And I think many different team cultures can work. You can have positive reinforcement where everyone's very free to do whatever they want, and failing is okay because you're going to learn and you're just going to keep moving towards that. That's not TSM.
Yeah.
TSM is very much, you made a mistake, this is your mistake, fix it. Right? Very direct, especially when you look at the way they talk to each other after games. It's confrontational. Like, sometimes it's not, doesn't even seem healthy. Like, I've seen Mithy and Bjergsen arguing after games, not even looking at each other, right? Like, right after the game, they're discussing these things. But at the end of the split, it does look like it's starting to come together. You do wonder, though, if they have those arguments, like, mid best of five, if they can actually make that course correction without being able to cool off.
Well, the other thing that kind of to temper expectations a little bit as well is just, So Mike Young had worked through all the stuff, and he started to look great in the regular season. But the playoffs is also a different beast. There's even more pressure. You know, you were saying all the pressure he felt during the regular season. And especially, you know, come like finals time or international or anything like that. Like, the bigger the stage gets, the more the pressure grows. And, you know, it is different going from challenger or academy to playing on the LCS stage. And it is different going from the LCS stage to the playoff stage and then to Miami and these sorts of things, right? Like, it's always going to be more and more pressure added on.
He also did say in the interview that he's like, they're having him have a lot of one-on-one time or Skype calls or whatever with Weldon. And and so they're very well.
I'm only laughing because of a TSM Legends episode and like something he said after it. I'm going to mess up the quote, but I thought it was really funny. He played against Team Liquid and he's like, Weldon told me before the game to imagine crushing Xsmithie's face.
Oh my.
And I did it, and it worked. I need to do that more. Like, it wasn't exactly that quote, okay, but it was something like,
in Mike Young's deadpan voice.
Yeah. It was like some like violent, like crushing Xsmithie. I'm just imagining Weldon giving him these pep talks. Like, you may be stressed now, but imagine.
And then
he does it, and he gives him confidence, and he wins. But,
okay. Well, they definitely have these things in mind, was the only thing reason I was bringing that up. So, you know, whatever way they're working it.
Imagine crushing your face.
Yeah. I need to get the quote right, because it's really bad if you just, like, imagine beating him. But, like, I thought it was something,
violent.
It, like, jumped out to me as something kind of strange. I'm like, what is Weldon telling this guy?
Oh, goodness.
Okay, so.
It has helped, actually. Yeah, so, I'm not writing it off. Being able to help him with mindfulness and calming down and dealing with the stress and using the pressure for positivity is something that every other member of TSM has worked with Weldon before to get, which is why they're specifically having him doing Skype calls with Weldon, because they wanted to be on the same page. Mm-hmm. So, it's been good.
Yeah, definitely the case. But we've talked a lot about TSM, so to look at it from a clutch side of things, you know, I think a lot of people have been talking about Fabivan. He's been pretty incredible. And is going to be extremely important for the team in this match, right? I also think, you know, there's going to be a lot of emphasis really on both the solo lanes. I think, you know, solo is someone who I think has been getting a lot of criticism, but actually has had some really good games to me. Even the last game that they actually lost, I want to say it was their tiebreaker against Cloud9, was the Gangplank game. I thought, like, he was like 1-3-1 or something, like, was his score. And I'm like, this is one of the best GP games I've seen in a while. Like, he just gets no help. And he was getting 1v2 kills on Licorice and this sort of thing, and was actually standing out. But where do you guys see Clutch?
So I agree with you that Solo has actually been doing well in the situations he's been put in.
Yeah.
But Clutch isn't doing anything with that pressure.
Yeah.
You watch these two or three players like fumble around and slowly kill Solo as he like drastically tries to outplay them. And you're like, I'm glad he bought that time for Lyra to kill Krugs.
Well, Dragon. I would say they were trading for Dragons a lot.
Sometimes they would trade for like an Ocean Drake or something, but they weren't getting turret pressure. They weren't getting map advantage, and it was just setting it up to happen again. So I think in that way, Clutch to me has actually been a very well-coached, consistent team. And they have found a way that they can win in this league to get themselves a good record. Like, they're relying on Fevimen to be a late-game carry. They're relying on Hakuho to make plays late in the game. And then Apollo's gotten better at being a late-game carry. And that formula has generated them a ton of wins. But I just don't think it works when you're, you know, outmatched individually by some of these other teams or up against some of the better teams.
I think that the cracks start to show when their opponent specifically takes this much time to practice for this team. Because I've just been, you know, tracking them over the season, and it had felt like most of the opposing coaches and pick bands and stuff have kind of had Clutch in a similar, you know, foggy area where they're like, okay, you know, that's a strong opponent, but it's not like the weekend is made by our game versus TSM, or the weekend is made by our game versus Team Liquid or something like that. And they put all their focus there. Fabivan, who, yes, he's been this insane carry for the team. His Azir is undefeated. 5 wins for them with the Azir. Right. I haven't seen enough teams targeting this champion versus him. I feel like he's just so comfortable on it. This is definitely his best champion. The KDA is 17. More than double of any other champion that they have played for him in the mid lane, and no other win rates beyond, you know, single plays even get close to that. So I feel like in the best of 5, there's no way that he should get this champion. And that's a large part of the, you're feeling like, oh yeah, the, you know, they build up, you know, he's this late game carry. Azir, you know, as an actual champion is such a huge part of that for me. Like the Orianna games, you know, he's got four of them. They only won one game. Mm-hmm. If people start to get a little bit deeper in here and craft a strategy to try and, you know, pick apart Clutch Gaming's very solid, you know, vision dial mid game, you know, trying to, you know, stifle a lot of plays from the enemy team. That their coach kind of talked about, as well as getting into the individual players, then I don't think they'll be able to follow the same sort of path.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, you know, how much are Clutch Gaming preparing for this? And what is going to be their adaptation in series?
Yeah. And speaking of like individually, even how they play in game, I have some stats that kind of showed me how they play. Febiven has the lowest forward percentage for mid laners. So he's at his turret a lot, or at least on his side of the lane. However, he also has one of the best CSDs at 15. And then watching games specifically in the last week, like paying very close attention to their last four or five games, the other mid laner will roam, and then Febiven pushes really hard, gets a bunch of CS and gets a bunch of turret damage. So he is actually very rarely making a move outside of mid lane. He's staying safe, waits for the guy to leave, gets the farm advantage, mm-hmm. and then tries to use that farm advantage in team fights. But those aren't complex plays. And those are also relying on the other team to not get something done with the pressure you were kind of giving them. And looking at their last nine games, every time they have played a playoff team, aside from Echo Fox, they've lost. They are 1-5 against playoff teams in their last nine, and 3-0 against non-playoff teams.
Yeah.
Like, this has been the story of them all week. It's playoffs, right?
And
I don't see them turning it around.
That's won 9 of their last 11, right? And it's a team that has been on this, like, slow upward trend the whole time. And I do like, you know, just to jump off that kind of, like, little laning point for Febiven, I always think it's kind of interesting. And this is, yes, a gross oversimplification, but I always see it as kind of...
I love
like,
these.
There's three buckets, essentially, right? There's, like, the Huhi bucket, where... the guy roams, he's going to lose CS and he's going to roam with you.
Yeah.
There's like the Bjergsen bucket where Bjergsen will always push first before he roams, mm-hmm. but he will push and then he will roam.
Right.
And then I see Febiven in the third bucket, which is just like pushed for turret damage, right? Like, mm-hmm. and there are like kind of these three decision paths. And yes, that is an oversimplification. I'm sure that they have done different things. But I think generally it does kind of encapsulate the three like different mindsets of how to play the game and like mm-hmm. which is most important, you know, because players like Bjergsen and Febiven are both seeing like the CS advantage as like, this is a guaranteed thing, right? Like I will deny farm. I will get something for sure out of it. And that is the most consistent style of play that you can do. Roaming and matching after that is maybe a little bit less consistent than just getting some turret damage, but the reward is there like much bigger, right? And, mm-hmm. and just giving up all farm to roam is super risky, but maybe you get there a couple seconds earlier for the play. And I always like looking at kind of the mindsets of the players and seeing, you know, what their style of play is and how they succeed, because some of these guys do it pretty differently. I also really like, you know, your point about the Azir, and I have similar thoughts on some of the champion pool for solo, because the way that they don't play around him at all to me means certain champions are and certain styles of champions are going to be very poor for him. So I actually think, you know, despite the fact that people say, oh, Gnar is a great safe blind pick, I think it's actually terrible mm-hmm. for solo, because mm-hmm. this is a champion that should be winning lane and should yep. be getting ahead in lane. And since they literally never help him and never play around him,
yep.
putting you on a champion that needs to have early game success and is supposed to be winning early is not a good recipe for success, right? And as a result, they've lost three of their four games on Gnar, whereas something like GP, even though it traditionally has a weaker laning phase, even if he is not getting help, as long as he is getting some farm and things, he's going to be relevant later and can scale into relevance. Similar with Cho'Gath. And to me, that's why those two champions are so important for him, because they're champions that you can be put alone, you can get beat up on, but as long as you're getting farm, you're going to have relevance, you're going to be scaling. And these are things that, you know, when we look at it and we see it, other teams are going to look at it and see similar things and similar patterns. And that, you know, is very concerning for Clutch. And then, yep. you know, if you're saying, okay, well, like, you know, do you really give Febiven an advantage over Bjergsen if Febiven's their best player? I don't think you can with how Bjergsen has been playing yep. recently. And then you look at the bot lane and you're like, well, you know, do you trust Apollo and Hakuo, who I think have been incredible in lane? You know, do they out carry like Zven and Mithy over the series? You know, they have been so consistent. Like, and Zven has the least deaths, I think, of any player who played all the games this split, or at least tied for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't seem like someone that you'll just randomly be killing off a lot. Like, I just don't see a lot of avenues for them to win.
Yeah, I totally agree. TSM's going to be able to blind pick GP like they did in the playoff game. That's going to be hard to answer. Either you're going to have to throw a ban on it, you're going to have to be able to beat it and play around solo, which is what they haven't do. A lot of negative stuff around Clutch Gaming. I think it shows that they are pretty big underdogs in this, even if they ended the regular season at the same record. But, you know, there's always that chance that Mike Young chokes, or that TSM was overperforming in the last few weeks and they still have a lot of communication problems.
Or that Hakuo makes a lot of plays, right? Like, he can be an X factor, certainly.
Or we get another explosion YouTube video.
Boom, boom. I'm going to predict, I'm going to say TSM 3-0.
Yeah, I'd say 3-0 as well, TSM.
Whoa, not even one game?
I don't think so, man. I just don't, with preparation for this series specifically.
I'm definitely giving them one game. They are going to get to late game at least one game. Like they are definitely, at that stage, they can definitely win. Like, their team fighting is actually quite good. So I'm at least giving them one game.
Yeah. Sick. And I can definitely see them win one, but I do not see them winning this series at all.
I'd be really surprised.
This is why that last tiebreaker was so important. Because to me, I would have been saying it's a death sentence for C9 as well. I thought whoever lost that probably loses. Because TSM had looked so much better than both those teams in the second
half. Why was so exciting?
Yep.
And now we get playoffs. Hopefully they're just as exciting. All right, Twitter questions. We got Rishmold the Cow. What teams, if any, do you think have a best of five nerf?
Nerf.
Ooh, I actually think Clutch Gaming.
I think Clutch has a best of five nerf.
For a lot of the reasons we were just talking about. Maybe that's because this is the one like we were looking at more closely than a lot of the other ones. Mm-hmm. But I would say refer to what we were just talking about.
I think
about.
Team Liquid might have a best of five nerf as well. And Clutch 9, C9, I think, has a best of five buff because of their experience in series and because of how many different looks they can give you. But that's like a minor thing. I think it's Clutch is the main one that has a nerf.
Clutch for sure. TL is kind of interesting because, the historical kind of patterns of Doublelift, when he loves a champion, he loves to like play like only that champion. So you could say, oh, well, maybe that's something that you can very easily target, right? Yeah. He played a bunch of Jhin games in a row. You know, if he wants to do that one style, then you can attack that. Obviously, he can play other styles, but maybe that's a small nerf. But definitely Clutch. The next one is a question I really like. It's from Momus the Mocker. It's hypothetical. If you had to be the GM of Optic, Fly, or Golden Guardians, which team would you pick? What changes would you make to improve them for Summer Split? And for me, this is like an instant, I want to be Optic, and it's kind of funny to say this now because there are already the rumors coming out about top and support being replaced for Elimination and Zig, and we already knew that they were swapping back and forth with Dokla, but I really strongly feel that this team, if you could get like, you know, a strong Academy support, like someone like Zazel comes to mind, even if you can find like solid top laner, solid support, I think that the three other members, like that core, is really strong, actually. I think Huey was really, really good throughout the split. I think Acadian has been solid, not amazing, but solid. And I think Arrow certainly has the potential, as we saw. You know, he was an MVP not long ago, right? Like, I think that team has the best core to build around by far of those three squads and requires the least change to actually make them successful, whereas the others, I feel like it's almost like blow it up.
I, too, read Reddit, and I am reading the first comment here that I actually agree with. Also, what do you think about moving Lemonation to the coaching staff as well for them?
I mean, that's happened before with him. I don't know if he wants to do it one question.
Well, I read this question before I read the Reddit.
I know. It was a joke, and I was also referencing where you, I think, got Freak with that when Freak brought up something from Reddit.
So, the coaching thing, I actually hadn't read the thread, but the coaching thing, I think, is interesting. I mean, this is not like some, it's like the worst kept secret. People have been talking about like, well, maybe they hadn't actually been planning out, but people have been talking about those guys getting maybe replaced or being targeted as sub type people for most of the split, right? Yeah. Like they have been, top lane has been heavily underperforming. Support has been heavily underperforming. I think that's the most like salvageable squad.
Yeah. Mark and I all year have been like, man, Optic's core of Acadian, Power of Evil, and Arrow, that's a really good core.
Yeah.
Like it's just the sides of the map are not doing well. But I will say, as far as being a GM, it has so many other factors than just exactly who was on the team at the time.
Of course.
Like, it has to budgeting, do with how deep the pockets are of the team, how good your coaching staff is, what type of coaching staff you're able to get. Because, yes, I think Optic has the most easy to identify like weaknesses. I wouldn't say that the Golden Guardians roster is like unsalvageable. I think Lorlo and Contracts have a lot of potential still. They have all of their import slots available. Mm-hmm. So depending on what their budget is, even moving into 2019, I think there's potentially a lot of growth for that if they have these domestic players locked down that are quite good. And I think Deathly's got a lot of potential.
But if we're looking at a four summer split, you know, like four, because that's what the question is, right?
For summer split, the easiest gains can be made by Optic.
Yeah, because you're not expecting like big imports to be available mid-year.
Although I think FlyQuest has a chance. I think if you put Keen back in for Fly, and like that's it, you actually have a pretty big improvement. And then you find a jungler. Like I haven't watched Academy close enough to know if there's a really good Academy jungler import or not. I think that team could be good because I think Flame is a really good top laner and I think Turtle's still decent.
What do you think, Kobe?
I think if you can't make any changes, if you add that little wrinkle in, then I would be excited to do Golden Guardians.
Okay.
Because like you're saying, Deathly has had some very big
really good games.
Like insane DPS numbers. Like when you're looking at the game numbers afterwards, you're like, wait a second. He actually got like what, 1500 DPM on Zaya or something.
In a loss.
Both Zaya games, were super insane for him. Contracts has had games where he has absolutely destroyed. High has also had quality games. So has Lord. Like each of these guys has had very big successes, but they have just been so desynced or spread out or stuff like that. So I think that would be a really interesting one to use the roster that they have and try and build on improvements without changing players.
For sure. Another cool question. Who do you guys think is the most improved player over the 2018 spring split? This comes from Annie.
So we need to define most improved. Is it most improved player from the beginning of the split to the end of the split, or is it most improved player from last year? Because I think in other sports,
I would say from last year.
When you do most improved, it's from last split.
Yeah. And to me, then the snap one is Mike Young or Cody Sun. Those are the two that are just like popping in my head. Cody Sun, and the thing is, it's funny because I think Cody Sun has a bit of a bum rap because everyone remembers that horrible play at the end of the Worlds, right? And everyone's
he was really good in summer split.
Exactly.
Last year.
He was getting a lot better in summer split. I still think that he has been one of the guys that has had the most steady improvement from spring of last year to summer of last year to spring of this year. I'm like, Cody Sun is getting good.
What about Aframu?
I was going to say Aframu.
I can see that too.
You're never, so this happened in basketball as well. Like Steph Curry won MVP, scoring like 25 points a game. And then the next split, he made like two more threes per game, broke his own record again by like 100 three-pointers. And people were like, we should give him MVP and most improved player.
Yeah.
And that, like, Aframu wasn't necessarily MVP in summer split, but he was an average support, like from the eye test last year, making a ton of mistakes and seemingly not having a very big champ pool. And I actually give it to Aframu as most improved from last split to this split.
I gotta stick with Cody, I guess. Who's yours?
Huh? I brought up Aframu.
So that's your choice?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm decided between him and Mike.
I think
three are all in there.
Okay. I think Meteos is there too.
All four of those are actually really good.
And they're all 100 thieves.
That's funny. You got, no, not all of them. So except for Mike. All three.
Okay, Mike, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that's, I mean, a lot of that is because goes to show, actually, Nate Chow was doing an interview and he's like, finally, people gotta give us, my players credit and stuff like this. Like, people, they made such a huge run getting first place, ending first place for 100 Thieves. I don't think I heard anyone predict first place. Like, yeah, people are like, okay, they're good. Or like, yeah, okay, you're underrating my boy Meteos or something. Like, they're big Meteos fans or big Afro fans or something like that. Yeah. But even the big, single player fans or whatever.
Yeah.
People weren't like, they're number one. And now they're number one.
Well, also like Someday fans. At the end of week six, Mark and I did a top lane tier list, and I think he had Someday at ninth and I had Someday at eighth, and it was performance through the first six weeks. When we did that, legitimately, when we did that, I heard nothing. Like, no one was defending Someday. Because in it, we said, there's no way Someday is the eighth best top laner in the league, but based on how he has played, like, I looked at his NAR stats, he actually had the worst NAR stats of any NAR player in the league, and he played it like seven times. And he had one of the worst gold differences in CSDs. And then the last 3 weeks, he like smashed and was super good again and like turned back into Someday.
And then he hit you with the tier list link on Twitter.
And then he hit you with the tier list on week six that cropped out the fact that it was a week six tier list. And people were like, what a joke list, man. You suck.
That's what you get for flaming him.
Yeah. But everyone agreed with it when I posted it. Azale? Yeah.
They cropped out the most important part that says
they cropped out that it was a week six tier list. And it was Someday's tweet. I don't know who gave him that picture. But
maybe he did it. Maybe he's like, I'm going to get this Jack guy. And his personal trainer is like, just picture crushing Jat's face for these last 3 weeks. Just visualize Jat's face, his smug face, putting you at ninth on the tier list, and then, just like that. And then he visualized it, and he succeeded. Now the first place.
That's good. Like, people should start using propaganda more. Like, cut out these things that didn't actually happen. Like, get a bunch of, like, Twitter comments and stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to have to doctor the predictions, actually, for the summer split, you know? Just change things around.
You just post my spring split predictions again at the end of summer and be like, look how wrong Jat was. Yeah. Still predicting COG first.
All right, so we'll do this last question. Benjamin Coomber asks, can we see a Dive Lol and Euphoria matchup for podcast for MSI? And, I mean, probably. We did something with Deficio last
week. I mean, we did that before.
Five-man podcast? That's a lot of people.
I don't know if we'll do five-man, but we'll definitely do. I'm sure we'll do some, like, cross things or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll do just a big five-man podcast, but I'm sure some of you guys will be on Dive or one of us will be on Euphoria.
We'll cross-star. Like, we'll go on to the other podcast and talk about stuff.
I'll allow them to come on
ours. Or maybe
we'll
just have Dive for you, and we'll do one episode.
Dive for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. All right. Yes. We'll think about it. We'll definitely try to make it happen. Thank you very much for the Twitter questions. Continue to send them in. Hashtag the Dive LOL. Hit up at RightChat, at RightKobe, at RightAzale on Twitter. Or if you want to do the Euphoria people, you can do their Twitters. No, Daniel Dracos and Right.
They who will not be named.
Yeah. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Dive. Thank you for joining us again. And remember that quarterfinals start this weekend on Saturday. Team Liquid versus Cloud9. That goes off at 2 p.m. Pacific time. Followed by TSM vs. Clutch Gaming on Sunday, which will be at our 12 p.m. Pacific time, much like our regular season start times. Also doing NALCS countdown before that, so tune in for that as well. Hope to see you there. Gonna add anything this time, Kobe?